This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for staying with us on The Morning Run. I'm Khoo Soo Chong with Philip C. this fine, fine morning. Now, the financial services industry we turn our attention to now, rapidly transformed in 2020 because COVID has accelerated the growth of fintech and digital banking services adoption. According to Fintech News Malaysia report, Fintech Malaysia report 2021, 460 million ringgit worth of mobile transactions were conducted in 2020, a 125% jump compared to the year before.
The usage of e-wallets also reached new highs with 3 million new mobile banking service subscribers in 2020, while 400,000 new businesses registered for QR code payment acceptance, a jump of 164% from the preceding year. It goes without saying that 2021 will probably see an increase in those numbers as well. Bank Negara Malaysia will also be issuing those 5 lucrative new digital banking licenses soon, and they've received a lot of attention. 29 applications were received last year. So the big question mark, how will 2022 look like for the Malaysian fintech sector, and what should we be keeping an eye out for?
Well, again, to answer that question, we now turn to Vincent Fong, the chief editor for Fintech News Malaysia. Vincent, good morning. Now, these new digital banking licenses, 5 of them, 29 applications, so 6 for every 5 applications, 6 for every 1. So that's, you know, huge oversubscription rate. What's your expectations for how these new entrants might affect banking in Malaysia?
Morning, John. Morning, Philip. Thanks for having me. I think first and foremost, we expect the licenses to be dished out probably by late this month during the MyFintech Week, which is organized by Bank Negara Malaysia. Based on the other markets where similar licensing frameworks have been issued, we don't foresee any of the banks to actually be operational by this year. Most likely, we'll see 2023 to be the year that these banks actually go out and be operational. In the beginning, I think largely you see many of these digital banks targeting the underserved segments, particularly the MSME space. And on the consumer's front, what we've observed during the launch of these kind of digital banks is that you likely see very kind of attractive interest rates to attract new customers, similar to what we've seen in Hong Kong.
I see. And do you foresee then Bank Negara issuing any more digital banking licenses? I presumably not, right, until they get these 5 up and running?
Yeah, not in the near future. I think at least Bank Negara wants to be able to see these digital banks to go through a full economic cycle and see how they perform before they decide whether or not to dish out any more licenses. But I don't see any reason for them to do that in the near to medium term.
Yeah, and Vincent, I mean, there's been 29 applications, 5 licenses, so you know, an oversubscription rate of essentially 6 for every 1 license. Who do you think are the best chances to secure a license, given the fact that there's, you know, a lot of these new players are even non-banking players?
I think that's what makes them interesting, right? They come in with a different kind of ecosystem. They come with different kind of innovations and different kind of data points they can use. But of course, the front runners that most industry players agree on is you know, the folks from the Boost and RHB consortium. Recently, you know, we also noticed that Grab started posting job ads for the digital banking position. So I feel like maybe they know something we don't. as I understand it, the applicants already know if they have received it by late December, so they can start prepping for the license. But again, those are just rumors, so I can't say with certainty.
I have to say, though, that this is really make or break for many of them, isn't it? Because they can't just operate as pure payment facilitators, right? They do need this digital banking license for their sustainability, for sure. Isn't it?
For sure. I mean, when you think about companies like BigPay who receive $100 million investment from SK, right? I think that a lot of that is kind of betting on their digital banking license. So I think, yeah, it's quite crucial to a lot of these players.
Yeah, and Vincent, I mean, you know, in a galaxy not so far away, the crypto space, we've seen, you know, new areas like decentralized finance coming up. We've also seen how Luno has, you know, announced huge new wallets being opened. You know, do you think the digital banking licenses, you know, they're not moving as fast as the DeFi space should reflect it to be?
You mean to say whether or not they should adopt this kind of
in some sense, yes.
Just based on what we've observed in other markets, I don't foresee them adopting it. I think the DeFi space and the CeFi space operates in very, very different speeds. In fact, I find that fintech sometimes, this kind of digital banking players are an intersection between more traditional finance and some of the more cool and sexy stuff in the galaxy not so far away.
so staying firmly put on Earth, right? Can you help us contrast the real challenges that digital bankings will have to face, and how different will they be from traditional banks then?
I think first and foremost, profitability is always going to be a challenge, right? Because in the initial phase, no matter how much customers you have affinity of adopting your services, you still have to spend a considerable amount of funds to actually acquire new customers. I think even Bank Negara recognized that, which is why they have a different kind of foundational phase, which allows for lower capital requirements. So they also recognize, okay, within the first few years, you know, profitability is going to be a challenge for a lot of these players. The other thing is that talent acquisition is going to be a big thing, right? Because there's only so many people with the kind of talent and the kind of skill set for financial services and tech. And the same five banks are going to be going for the same pool of talent all at the same time. So, you know, attracting talent is going to be an issue. And the other thing is also the retention of this talent as well. Because, you know, within the first year in Hong Kong, all the C-levels that we've met, all the C-levels we interacted with, most of them have resigned within the second year. So, you know, that's going to be a challenge moving forward.
Which then I think begs the question, right? What is that pathway to break even? If you're not going to be profitable for the next year or two, right? What do you think is going to trigger that? You know, do you expect to see these five digital licenses consolidate or one or two exit out later unceremoniously? What is the pathway to break even then?
It's hard to say, right? So I think if you look at the profitable digital banks around the market are those who already has an existing base. So if those with the licenses, those who secure the licenses have an existing base and expand to acquire enough customers and hit certain critical mass, then we may start seeing profitability within a few years. Of course, you know, the first few years is very CapEx heavy, right? So that's always going to be difficult.
And Vincent, you know, by way of contrast, when you look at Singapore, fewer licenses, higher capital requirements, what can Malaysia learn from the Singapore experience?
Not much, actually, because they haven't really gone operational.
But in terms of the, you know, in terms of the strategy, the framework, the planning, by way of those comparisons, and especially what Phil was mentioning, the path to profitability.
It's quite similar in a sense, the framework. I think the capital requirement, yes, it's different. I think, if I'm not mistaken, ours is lower. I'm not sure it's a figure, actually.
I see. But I guess then my question then is, you know, I guess when you contrast with Singapore, it's very different, right, the intention also, the digital banking license, because here the focus really is what we call the underserved and the MSME sector. So actually the question then is, how ready is the underserved and the MSME in kind of being offered these digital banking solutions and products, right? How susceptible are they to assume and, you know, take on these new products then?
So I think depending on the players and their strategies, right? So if you look at Boost, for example, Boost Holdings, for example, they have a subsidiary called Aspirasi, which is really providing lending services. BigPay also has a money lending service, which they also do provide to the MSMEs as well. From some of these numbers, they do look relatively encouraging. I mean, for example, if you just look at digital financial services, Grab also provides payment services to a lot of these F&B merchants as well, right? So I don't think it's going to be terribly difficult.
It's not a stretch,
It's not a stretch,
Right. And so if we shift our attention from banking, right, to insurance and Takaful, because we also saw that BNM has issued a discussion paper, right, on the proposed framework for licensing
for
digital insurers and Takaful operators. You know, what's your view on this? And do you have a sense on the timeline and horizon for that?
So this is just a discussion paper. After the discussion paper, they're going to issue a consultation paper. So this is a very initial stage where they are trying to seek feedback from the industry. So if I'm not mistaken, I think they are looking to come out with a framework. They didn't specify, but I think later in 2022, we probably should be able to see a consultation paper on this.
Okay, Vincent, thanks so much for your time. That was Vincent Fong, Chief Editor for FinTech News Malaysia. Yeah, that in the Takaful, you know, white paper, discussion paper, lower minimum paid up capital, just 40 million ringgit, and incumbent insurers who wish to apply for digital licenses may do so through a separate body like a subsidiary or via a consortium. So quite low hurdles. I guess that's just meant to, you know, generate more encouragement.
Well, yeah,
interest.
Yeah, I think insurance penetration has a lot of room to grow. Perhaps that's why they are kind of lowering the hurdle here. But you know, for me, the 5 digital banking licenses, if they do it well and they really help serve the underserved and the underbanked and the MSME sector, I think it will be really helpful. As Vincent was saying just now, some of the current contenders at least have the databases, right, and the relationships to really offer that value add. So the question is, though, can they make money? Are they going to, be able to be profitable?
Yeah, because when you talk about the addressable market, these are the underbanked and underserved, which typically comes at a higher cost profile, right? You want to charge. That's why, you know, poor borrowers get charged higher interest rates. The other thing also is how, you know, for example, how expensive will it be for them to tap this financing, first of all? And second of all the new players that come in, where are they going to get the capital base? They've got to generate capital from somewhere.
Well, hopefully the cost of operating the digital banking is much lower than traditional banking to help offset and manage that.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.